It's time for the all-new Gervie's Law, cross-examining the ages, with your host, Alan Gervie, and introducing your co-host, Michelle Lobato. Alan is the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm which has represented injured workers for over 40 years. And now, here's your host, Alan Gervie.
Hi, I am Alan Gervie, and this is Gervie's Law.
And I'm Michelle Lobato, and this is still Gervie's Law.
It's still Gervie's Law. What a beautiful voice Michelle has.
Thank you.
And I want to talk about voices because we've been doing this show for about 13 years. We always had a male, tough guy, you know, radio-sounding voice, DJ guy. And now we have this very strong women's voice who introduces Gervie's Law.
Yeah, thanks for the compliments. I should be doing ASMR, shouldn't I?
I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about the announcing.
Wow.
The announcing. Although, of course, you have a wonderful voice. And more than that, you have a wonderful intellect to help us here at Gervie's Law.
I appreciate it.
Uncover all the issues that we talk about. But I do want to talk about, we have this voiceover, this women's voiceover, and it's partly due to our first guest, who we're so excited to have with us here in studio, Gloria Allred, who has been a women's rights activist and advocate for so many years. And I'm not trying to make you old, because you aren't, Gloria. You're in amazing shape. You look wonderful. But, you know, my minority rights, and you've won so many awards as far as your work goes for helping women and advocating. I think the first time you were on the show many years ago, you said, "I speak for those who don't have a voice." And that was when I asked you, do you get offended when people say you're always in the media, you're talking, you're doing news conferences? You said, no, not at all. But now we have this voice who introduced Gervie's Law, and it's because of you, Gloria Allred. Welcome back.
Well, thank you very much.
Oh, look at that.
Amazing.
Standing ovation.
Amazing.
You know, on radio, you can't tell that it's a standing ovation, but there it is.
I'll take it standing or sitting or lying down ovation, whatever. Thank you very much for that. And hi, Michelle. Alan, thanks for inviting me. It's just a pleasure to be with you again, because we've been together in the past.
Many times.
We are now celebrating in my law firm, Allred, Morocco & Goldberg, 50 years of practicing law, and I'm just very blessed that I have a wonderful legal team, and we believe in fighting for justice for women and also for minorities, for gay, lesbian, transgender individuals, racial minorities, ethnic minorities, those who've been discriminated against because of their age or, you know, their physical disability. That's what we love to do, and I'm blessed to be able to continue to do it.
You know, it's such a nice thing to talk about 50 years and how life has changed. And before we get any further, I do want to wish you congratulations, because I know you just got back from San Francisco.
Yes.
And you had a grandchild.
Yes, this is my first great-grandson.
Great-grandson.
Was born.
Right.
And he's now soon to be 2 weeks old.
2 weeks old.
And of course, he's a beautiful baby. And, you know, all of us who have grandchildren or great-grandchildren or just babies.
Right.
You know, they're all beautiful. And we're all blessed to have them.
And you went and spent time. His name is Jack, is that right?
His name is Jack. And my granddaughter delivered the baby, because I always say women deliver, doctors just receive them.
That's right.
Doctors don't deliver. And my granddaughter is also an attorney, as is my grandson, as is my daughter. And so we just had another baby feminist attorney.
You know, I have baby feminist. I will tell you that both your daughter, of course, Lisa Bloom, and your granddaughter have been on the show, because mm-hmm. they were on the show, I think it was when she just became an attorney, which was, what, about 5 or 6 years ago? Mm-hmm. And it was a pleasure to have them. Lisa's been on the show quite a bit. We haven't had Jack on the show yet.
Okay, well, I'll have to arrange for that. Okay.
I want to hear his perspective, whether, and I told you this, and it's been so meaningful in my daughter's life. She's now 11, and when she was about 4 or 5 years old, we were right here in studio outside. You took her aside, and you started telling her about women's rights, and you I have a great video. Her name is Harper, and you said, Harper, I want you to know that no one should touch you unless you give them consent, mm-hmm. and you have to speak up and make sure they know that you have a voice in all of this. She was about 5 years old. She has not forgotten that.
Oh, that is so sweet. Well, I always say that to young children and older children because, you know, especially at that age or younger or even a little older, they think they need to do what adults tell them to do. But in terms of touching their body, they need to know they have a right to say no, or that someone should ask if it's okay to hug them. Is it okay to kiss them? Is it okay to touch them? That they can say no, thank you. They can also tell their mommies and daddies if somebody has asked and they don't want to be touched, and somebody's touched them even though they said no. So that's the way we help to prevent child
right.
sexual abuse, and it's very important because I do a lot of cases of adult survivors of child sexual abuse or, you know, just child survivors of child sexual abuse, you know, suing the predators. And, you know, a lot of people say to me, I wish I had known that I could say no. It's not their fault they didn't because nobody told them they
right.
could.
And that's what you're telling them.
That's what I'm telling them. And they usually look at me in astonishment, like, you really? That's okay to say no?
And you know what was interesting? In that moment, you practice what you preach because someone was taking a picture of you and Harper, and you turned to her and you said, we're going to have a picture taken. Is it okay if I put my arm around you?
Yes, exactly.
And she looked at you and said, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
She was like, this is the grandmother that I always wanted.
Oh, yeah, it's very sweet.
My mother's passed away, so I'm sure my mother would have been the same. But anyway, you know, I know, Michelle, this is your first time meeting Gloria in person.
It is.
And one of the things that, before we get any further, you talked about your firm, Allred Morocco and Goldberg, mm-hmm. at 50 years old, but we have to give condolences to you
yes.
because very recently you lost mm-hmm. a giant in the legal field, and more importantly, a wonderful human being, your partner, your friend, and of course, someone you met in law school, Nathan mm-hmm. Goldberg.
Yes. Thank you for asking about that and mentioning that. I just recently, this month actually, he passed away, may he rest in peace, gave a eulogy for him. He had fought a long battle with cancer all year and finally, you know,
Succumbed to it.
And here's what I said a little bit of at the eulogy, if I may.
Sure.
I said, Sunday night of this week and Monday were possibly the happiest and also the most painful days of my life. On Sunday night, my first great-grandson, Jack, was born. And the next day, my beloved law partner, Nathan Goldberg, who had been my friend and my partner for more than 50 years, passed away. And the highest praise that I can give Nathan is that I hope that my new great-grandson, Jack, will grow up to be the kind of human being that Nathan was. Kind, thoughtful, wise, caring, and a true warrior for justice. For those who had no power against the rich and the powerful and the famous, who abused their power and thought that they could get away with their abuses without paying the consequences. The powerful mistakenly thought that because they had not met the one, the only, the great Nathan Goldberg. Nathan
wow.
was not just smart. He was wise. He was not just a good man. He was a force for good. Nathan did not just talk about justice for victims. He lived it. He breathed it. He fought for it with a passion that his clients, his partners, his colleagues, and all who truly knew him understood. And he won. And one of Nathan's heroes growing up was the then famous trial attorney, Louis Neiser, who wrote a book called My Life in Court. And Neiser said, true religion is the life we lead, not the creed we profess, end quote. So Nathan was Jewish, but the life that he led was and is a living example to us all of what a moral person can and should do with their life. In college, I learned how to make a moral decision. If you have the ability to act to help others, the desire to help them, and the opportunity to help, it's the only moral choice that you can make. And Nathan had the ability to act, the desire, and the opportunity to act, and he always made the moral choice to help as many as he could because he had a noble heart, and he also knew his moral duty as a Jewish person to help repair the world of our clients who had been subjected to so much injustice. Nathan was the essence of what Mahatma Gandhi defined as a true hero. Gandhi said, quote, a true hero is not defined by their strength, but by their ability to inspire and lead others, end quote. And by that definition, Nathan was an example of a true hero because every day that we knew him, he inspired and he led all of us in our law firm. So the lyrics of the song Wind Beneath My Wings said it best, and I will not say it here except that he was my hero. And basically, he deserves, I'm going to say, 95% of all the credit for everything I've been able
well,
to do.
Well, I don't know about that.
So I will say that we were very much alike, and some clients described us like an old married couple. And I would define our relationship as like a brother and sister separated at birth. So we would often go into the hallway outside of her room where our clients were and have a friendly but strong disagreement about what a settlement in the case should look like. And then we would return to the room with our clients and they would laugh because they often overheard our heated debates and they understood how much we cared about them and how much we wanted to give them a just result. So Nathan also worked endless hours for our clients, although I tried to get a good night's sleep 6 or 7 hours a night. Several months ago, I wrestled with what I could do for Nathan. I felt so helpless because I knew that all the medical options had failed. And so finally, I had an idea. I asked him if I could interview him for a video wow. about his life and give it to his family and friends. And he immediately said yes. And although I was prepared to have a long talk to persuade him to do it, he agreed. And I did show the final video, by the way, Alan, after his funeral and in my office before our holiday party. But I did ask him if he had any advice for young lawyers. And here's what he said. He said, find out what you love to do and do it. Surround yourself with good people. Always be honest, even when it hurts, and always do what is right and best for your clients. That's the essence of Nathan Goldberg, who I had the honor to know, work with, respect, admire, be inspired by, and love with all of my heart for 50 years, more than that. Thank you, Nathan, for the blessing that you've been to me and to women and to minorities. You were and are a prince among men, and a warrior for justice for women and minorities. And every day of your life, you demonstrated that through your actions and mitzvahs, good deeds. Not just your words. I'll never forget you and the blessing that you've been to me and so many. As Horatio said in Shakespeare's Hamlet, upon Hamlet's death, now cracks a noble heart. Good night, sweet prince. And flights of angels sing thee to thy rest.
Wow. Mm. That's so touching. I mean, you hit so many points there. And what's interesting is the balance of the values and the goodness of Nathan mm-hmm. with the advocacy. And sometimes, as you know, it can get, in the lawyer's world, a little bit heated, as you mentioned.
Well, it can, and being a partner, but we always respectfully argued with each other about what's the best strategy.
I'm not talking about the two of you. I'm talking about the others, the people who are trying to violate and to the rights of your clients.
And he was strong. You know, he was a fantastic, exceptional trial lawyer. He won more than $52 million for one victim of sexual harassment. That's a verdict. That was affirmed on appeal. I think we also won more than $1 million in attorney's fees in addition to that.
Wow.
And that's for one client. And then he won another $5 million for another client against the same sexual harasser. And that was for a different client, sexual harassment in the workplace. He won so many precedent-setting cases. Like one of his favorites, and he mentioned in the video, was Debbie Thorne versus the city of El Segundo, where she applied to be a police officer, and she was asked questions about her sex life. And it turned out that she had, that she also had an affair with a police officer who was employed by the city of El Segundo. And she didn't get the job, but he was allowed to continue as a police officer. Oh, wow. Double standard. Anyway, he fought for her. The court, Judge Real, in federal court, dismissed the case. He appealed. Nathan was successful on appeal. We went back for another trial. He was awarded another verdict, but judge reduced it. He appealed again. And it was successful again. And he was very persistent. And
sounds that
he
way.
Established a precedent that has that a prospective employee cannot be asked questions about her private sex life as a condition of getting a job. And that precedent, a true precedent, has been cited by thousands of times, by literally thousands, by lawyers, lawyers. Who are representing their clients, who have been asked questions about their sex life. And so it's had an enormous impact, and we ourselves have cited our own precedent. So that's the kind of case that Nathan did. He was always open to, you know, helping to win new expressions of law, new interpretations
so
of law,
important.
I should say. And all of that, he was so kind to so many people. So it's a great loss. And I just do want to thank you for mentioning him because I will remember him every day of my life. Well, and I know that all the clients you helped, and many of them have contacted me, and they thank us so much for being able to have him in their lives to help to win justice.
You know, his name and his spirit and who he was will live on. The precedents that he established, I'm sure, will have impacts for many years to come.
It already has, and we just had a case that our trial team, even without him, won a big verdict in federal court against Chevron. And it was a disability discrimination case. We just won a $4 million verdict, our legal team did, against Chevron, and yesterday an additional significant award of more than $1 million attorney's fees.
Every day.
And the judge took the time to say on the record, what a great team, what great attorneys, how they were really worked and did a great job on this case.
And that's really important.
That's important. And I hear that from a federal judge.
You've been working tirelessly on the Jeffrey Epstein.
Oh,
when
yeah,
you
Jeffrey
talk
Epstein.
About the sexual abuse.
And still am, and it's still in the news. And of course, there is expected to be a release, or let's put it this way, required to be a release under the new federal law. Of the investigative files of the Department of Justice. And I represent 27 survivors, or have represented 27 survivors.
And I know when I've talked to you before, I've said women, and you said, well, there's two men as well.
Yeah, that's true. There were.
And when we talk about this, we hear about the Clintons doing their deposition coming up in January, and how that will impact the whole situation with all of the names that we hear that have been involved with Jeffrey Epstein.
Yeah, and of course, former President Clinton has denied any wrongdoing whatsoever. So there's also, and I'm here to defend him, but I don't have any knowledge that he has done anything wrong, so we'll see what the deposition produces. And there was a time way back, in the Wayback Machine, yeah, the Monica Lewinsky, where I defended him so many times on KBC Radio when I had a talk show here many years ago. But then, of course, when the evidence came out of Monica Lewinsky and, you know, his DNA on her dress, then I would not defend him anymore and said he should be impeached. But having said that, we'll see what this produces. We know there is a political slant here, which we cannot ignore, by, you know, the Department of Justice, as directed by the president, who obviously, I mean, this is not an independent Department of Justice anymore.
Gloria, can I ask, where should we draw the line between what's considered wrong here? Like, going to those parties just as a bystander, witnessing what's happening, like, what do you think, where do you think we should decide?
Well, that's a really good question, Michelle, because part of the reason, a substantial part of the reason, that survivors of Jeffrey Epstein, by the way, allegedly there are more than 1,000. We don't know, but just a small minority have actually spoken out.
Right.
Having said that, the purpose is truth and transparency. That's why they wanted the files released. And also, you know, there's a widespread belief that there are third parties. In other words, rich, powerful, famous men who went to those parties, and also some of whom did business with Jeffrey Epstein. And, you know, the question is, did any of them enable, assist, or conspire to engage in sex trafficking with Jeffrey Epstein and Ms. Maxwell, or just with Jeffrey Epstein? And should they have been prosecuted? There's a great deal of skepticism about, you know, the justice that was not afforded to many victims of justice of Jeffrey Epstein. For example, the 2008 decision by Alex Acosta to, instead of having the federal you know, Department of Justice prosecute him on very serious charges made by underage girls and women in Florida, to have that transferred to the state for prosecution, which ultimately ended up with Jeffrey Epstein only having to serve about 13 months in jail and being allowed to leave the jail every day to go to his office.
Right.
And it now comes out that he was sexually abusing girls and women in his office.
Jeez. After that.
During the term he was supposed to be serving his sentence in jail, not prison. And then he would go back and, you know, sleep in the jail at night.
Unbelievable.
So how that all came about is part of the failure of the justice system to protect the victims. And then, of course, when he was arrested in New York years later and was going to be prosecuted on federal charges, he mysteriously either committed suicide or it was a homicide. I don't know which. You know, everybody can speculate. And so basically, many of the survivors were deprived of their right to confront him in a court of law.
But so, isn't that why it's so important to get this information out?
It is important, and that is one of the reasons. By the way, one of the few subjects that Democrats, Republicans, and Independent all agree on is like 80 to 90% of everyone thinks the file should be released.
Yeah.
They want to know because they can't. They just feel that the system has failed the survivors, and they're right.
And I don't think they want certain people to have this covered up. I mean, there's a lot of well-known people that may be involved, and they really shouldn't get away with it. And that's something that you've been preaching for so long.
Absolutely. But on the other hand, I'm going to say that I don't expect all the files to be released because I do expect that perhaps there will be, you know, some reasoning given like, oh, well, we're still investigating certain men and therefore we can't release those files. I don't know.
Yeah,
that's it's my guess. I'll call it probably an educated guess.
Stay tuned. Stay tuned.
Exactly. But it's good that the law got passed, and that credit is due to the survivors who spoke out on that.
You know, we only have about 30 seconds, and I want to say What a beautiful show today, talking about Nathan Goldberg and talking about what he meant to you and to his clients, his friends, his family, and to the world. We really want to dedicate this show to the memory of Nathan Goldberg.
Thank you so much.
And may his whole aura about him and everything that he represented live on, even though he's no longer with us.
Thank you. Keep Glory. Up the fight for justice in his name or in the name of your children.
It's so important. And in this world, with everything that's gone on recently, we have to keep that in mind.
Thank you.
Gloria Allred, thanks for being with us here on Gurvey's Law.
Thank you, Alan.
All right. Thanks for listening to Gurvey's Law. We will have another show next week. Looking forward to it. And then we're going to have Gloria back in a few weeks. And that's going to be a show you don't want to miss. See you next time.